Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we're going to give you an update on the county's rollout of veterans services, actions that are being taken directly in response to an East County Magazine special investigation and follow-up. Then we'll give you some information about the deadline to sign up for health insurance under Covered California, or Obamacare, since the deadline is fast approaching when penalties for those without insurance will kick in. Speaking of health, we've also been looking into vaccination rates at schools here in East County, and what we found may shock you, so stay tuned. On our local government report, we'll tell you about key agenda items coming up before the councils, boards, and commissions in East County this week. Also hear about a decision by the University of California to soon require that all incoming students be vaccinated. On our Green Scene report, we'll tell you about some San Diegans heading to Oakland for a protest march against fracking and why they say fracking in California should be banned. Hear about community efforts to raise funds to help a woman who was burned over more than 75% of her body intentionally by her boyfriend, and how people in Ramona are pitching in to help out. Controlled burns are continuing this week in Cleveland National Forest and Rancho Cuyamaca State Park to clear brush before prime fire season. But the practice is also sparking controversy, and we'll tell you why on today's show. Also hear about some near misses between airplanes and drones and what's being done to make the skies safer. We'll have news about El Cajon's Youth of the Year Awards coming up too, and then on the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview will be with Susan Brinkman, founder of the Center for Electrosmog Prevention in La Mesa. She's been fighting against smart meters and for consumers' right to opt out of having a smart meter on their home. She'll have the latest on those efforts and tell us why she believes former Public Utilities Commission Chairman Michael Peavy pushed through a decision that favors utilities over consumers on many key points. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. Back in September of 2013, East County Magazine published an article titled, "Why is County Veterans Services Department Ignoring Rural East County Veterans?" We won a major journalism award and inspired Supervisor Diane Jacob to author a measure aimed at bringing veteran services to libraries in rural East County. The measure was adopted by supervisors in March of 2014. The measure stated that veteran services would be introduced into the El Cajon, Ramona, Julian, and Pine Valley libraries by the end of 2014, with an intent to add additional locations in the future. But when we did some follow-up and contacted County Veteran Services Department in January of this year, we learned that a year and a half after our initial report, only two libraries have received veteran services so far, El Cajon and Rancho San Diego, which wasn't even on the list. Both are in suburban areas near La Mesa, the only East County location that already had veteran services, so there are still no veteran services in rural areas. Will Quintong is the interim director of the county's Aging and Independent Services Department, which handles veteran services. We called and talked with him about this problem. He says one of the big issues is manpower, adding that privacy concerns when discussing veterans' medical and disability concerns is another hurdle to overcome. The measure passed by supervisors did not provide funding for training or additional personnel, although potentially personnel could be shifted away from other areas such as the many coastal and central San Diego locations where we documented that veteran services are offered frequently at sites that are close together and easily accessible via mass transit, unlike rural areas in East County with no public transportation. Quintox said, "We're trying our best. It is a priority of ours to have outreach in East County." He added that a demonstration program for the Connect a Vet project was done briefly last year at the Julian Library with hopes to add a new location every 6 months or so. It may not be as fast as people want, he said, but we're moving. But with the Iraq and Afghanistan wars recently ended and a flood of veterans who have recently come home here, the need for immediate help is high in East County, which has the largest number of veterans of any region in San Diego County, which has the most veterans of any county in America, according to Supervisor Jacob. So we contacted Supervisor Jacobs' office after our conversation with Mr. Quintong. Her staffer called back and advised us that a meeting would be held the very next day to establish priorities for the Veterans Outreach Program in East County. After that meeting, Supervisor Jacobs' staffer notified us that the county will begin putting a Veterans Services staffer into the Pine Valley Library later this month, and in addition, a pilot program is set to launch in Julian in March. Supervisor Jacob issued a statement to us that says, "It's important to make veteran services as accessible as possible, so I share the frustration over the pace of the rollout in our rural areas. I'm assured that county staff is moving to address privacy and security issues, and expansion should move rapidly once the Julian pilot is in place in March. For now, veterans can access services at the El Cajon Library on the second and fourth Monday of each month, and at the Rancho San Diego Library on the second Thursday of every month during regular library hours. Services are also available at the La Mesa Library on Fridays. No appointments are required, and walk-ins are welcome." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with an important health care reminder. February 15th is the deadline to sign up for health insurance this year under Covered California, the state's exchange for purchasing insurance under the Affordable Care Act, which requires every American to have health insurance. Last week, health officials gathered at UCSD Medical Center to urge San Diegans to enroll in the health care program, Times of San Diego reports. "The need to get everyone insured is critical," said Dr. Raul Coimbra, the hospital surgeon in chief. "As a physician and a parent, I know the importance of having insurance." Assembly Speaker Tony G. Atkins and Peter V. Lee, Executive Director of Covered California, also spoke out. Lee praised San Diego County for being a leader in enrollment statewide and reminded residents that they will face a tax penalty if they aren't insured. But, he noted, the far worse penalty is not having an early diagnosis of cancer. Countywide, 122,000 people bought insurance through Covered California in 2014, and so far for 2015, 28,000 more have signed up. Nick Mazzioni, director of County Health and Human Services Agency, said the real value is having access to health care. He urged the public, "If you really love someone, then get him covered." You can sign up online for coverage and potential tax benefits with Covered California. In addition, the county's 211 service can help you answer questions and complete forms. You can also get help from a licensed healthcare broker at no additional costs.
The measles epidemic has raised concerns among health officials over the growing number of parents who are refusing to vaccinate their children. Countywide, 7.6% of kindergartners locally are unvaccinated or behind on their vaccination boosters, Voice of San Diego reports. The range of vaccination rates across San Diego County is about as broad as it can get, from 0% to 100%, depending on the school. East County Magazine has now analyzed vaccination rates in East County, and we found many schools that have high rates of unvaccinated kindergartners. The rate out here ranged from just 1% unvaccinated at Mount Vernon Elementary School in Lemon Grove to a staggering 90% of kindergartners who are unvaccinated at Holy Trinity, a private school in El Cajon. Many East County or inland area schools have 20% or more of students who have not been vaccinated. That includes the Greater San Diego Academy in the Jamul-Dulzura Union District with 46% unvaccinated, Heartland Christian Homeschool in Spring Valley at 44%, Innovations Academy in Poway, 38%, Creekside Early Learning Center in Alpine, 37%, Rancho San Diego Elementary, 28%, Shabbat Hebrew Academy in Scripps Ranch, 28%, Dehesa Elementary, 25%, Lemon Avenue School, 24%, Loma Elementary in the La Mesa Spring Valley District, 22%, Maryland Avenue in La Mesa, 21%, Ramona Community School, 21%, and Madison Avenue School in El Cajon, 20%. You can find a map and a database chart on our website at eastcountymagazine.org in our health section showing all schools in East County and San Diego's inland regions with high rates of unvaccinated youngsters, as well as a link to details on schools countywide published by Voice of San Diego. California currently allows parents to claim exemptions from vaccination requirements for personal beliefs, unlike most states where only religious or medical need exemptions are allowed. A bill co-authored by San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez would eliminate the personal belief exemptions to protect public health. The rate of unvaccinated children is important because they can contract diseases such as measles and endanger other children or adults who rely on the herd immunity of numerous people who have been vaccinated. Unvaccinated people can spread these potentially dangerous illnesses to those who cannot get a vaccine for medical reasons, such as people with immune diseases or illnesses such as lymphoma cancer, as well as infants under 1 year of age. Complications from measles can include high fever, brain damage, hearing damage, deafness, pneumonia, and even death. Before the measles vaccine, several hundred people died of measles in the U.S. Children who do not have vaccinations can also face interruptions in their education, since some schools, including schools in Los Angeles and Chicago, are now sending unvaccinated children home for 3 weeks following an exposure to measles at their schools to prevent spread of the disease. State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Torlakson has urged all parents to get all recommended vaccinations for their children to prevent debilitating diseases such as measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox. He says that vaccinations keep students healthy so they can attend school, learn, and succeed, and they eliminate school disruptions such as those caused by the recent outbreak of measles. The superintendent adds that as a science teacher, I have reviewed the science, and I can tell you that the vaccines have been proven safe and effective for those students who are healthy enough to get the immunizations. They keep your child and your community protected. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Here are some of the most important items on the agenda at councils, boards, and commissions representing East County this week. El Cajon City Council meets on Tuesday, February 10th at 3 p.m. Council will consider approving plans and bid specifications for re-roofing the East County Performing Arts Center, which has been closed for several years due to disrepair. The item is on the consent calendar. There will also be a public hearing regarding sale of property on Raleigh Avenue, as well as reports by the mayor, council members, and the Public Safety Facilities Financial Oversight Committee. La Mesa City Council meets on Tuesday, February 10th at 4 p.m. A budget monitoring report, city treasurer's quarterly report, and police chief report on crime will be presented. A vacancy on the traffic commission is also slated to be filled. Santee City Council meets on Wednesday, February 11th at 7 p.m. This week, council will hold a public hearing to solicit proposals for community development block grants. A zoning change from low-density to medium-density residential will be considered for undeveloped property on Prospect Avenue. Other topics will include streetlight maintenance, adoption of a citywide Safe Routes to School plan, and partnering with San Diego State University on the SAGE project. The SAGE project would enable students to participate in feasibility studies for projects in Santee, such as Athletics Center, New Civic Center, Aerotropolis at Gillespie Field, Water Quality and River Park projects, a hotel, pedestrian bridge, traffic and walkability issues, among others. San Miguel Fire District will hold a special meeting on oversight of the contract with Cal Fire on Tuesday, February 10th at 9 a.m. The full board will meet on Wednesday, February 11th at 5:30 p.m. The agenda includes a resolution of application by a district requesting the Local Agency Formation Commission to start proceedings to expand the district's sphere of influences and annexation of territory. You can find full agendas for these meetings at the websites for each board, commission, or council. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. The University of California has announced that it will require incoming students to be vaccinated for measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, meningitis, tetanus, and whooping cough. Students must show proof of these vaccinations and also be screened for tuberculosis starting in 2017. However, individual campuses can choose to begin implementation earlier, according to a press release issued by the UC system. Currently, UC only requires students to be vaccinated against hepatitis B, though several campuses do have additional requirements. The plan is designed to help protect the health of students and campus communities, and it's been in the works for a year, but the need is more pressing than ever given the current multi-state measles outbreak and the reemergence of other vaccine-preventable diseases among those not completely immunized. Dr. Gina Fleming, medical director at UC Student Health Insurance Plan, says we know that these preventative measures are effective. The plan was developed based on recommendations from the California Department of Public Health and in consultation with UC's Student Health Center representatives and others. In fall 2016, all incoming UC students will be expected to have their required vaccines and enter the data into the university's electronic medical record platform, but it won't be enforced until the following year. Starting in fall 2017, UC students who do not meet vaccination requirements will have a hold put on their registration. All UC campuses have experienced cases of vaccine-preventable diseases in recent years. While getting such vaccines has long been considered a good public health practice, the cost of vaccines and the difficulty for student health staff to obtain and verify information have been barriers to implementation in the past. But two developments have broken down those barriers. The Affordable Care Act now provides insurance coverage for vaccines. Also, a new electronic medical record platform soon will allow UC students to directly enter their vaccination date. The issue of immunization has evolved into a hot topic of discussion in California and across the nation in recent weeks after a measles outbreak that started at Disneyland and has now reached nearly 100 cases in California. UC's plan will allow exemptions for medical or religious purposes. The UC plan might be extended in the future to include students already enrolled. And in addition, more vaccines could be added, such as polio, hepatitis, and flu shots. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
On February 6th at midnight, buses left Old Town, bound for the March for Real Climate Leadership in Oakland, California. On board were activists from San Diego 350, as well as students from King Chavez Community School in downtown San Diego, with their teacher, Keith Fowler. The local marchers aimed to join an expected group of 10,000 people from multiple organizations, among them Sierra Club and the Backbone Campaign, at the march in Oakland. According to Reporting San Diego, Peg Mitchell of San Diego 350 says fracking is happening in Kern County, where we are depleting our water resources and also growing our food. This is where she took the students from school in December for a class trip. The students were shocked at what they saw there, the teacher reports. Why is fracking a problem in California? Because conventional oil, which is cheaper and easier to extract, is nearly gone. What fracking or hydraulic fracturing does is inject water and chemicals under great pressure into the ground, breaking the rock. This releases a form of oil that is more like a sludge. It is also more damaging to the environment and the atmosphere. The water used in the process is also lost from the water cycle since it is extremely toxic. It is partially being reused in fracking operations, but in the middle of a historic drought, this is also affecting the available water that our state has. Reporting San Diego also asked Unitsky Rico, one of the students, why she is making the trip to protest. She said that we all have to do this to protect future generations. She intends to be an activist from now on in order to stop climate change and ensure a better life. The San Diego 350 activists say that they want the governor to show real leadership and ban fracking in the state. Governor Jerry Brown will be joining New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo, who has banned the practice, as well as France, Scotland, and Wales. Other European countries are also considering banning fracking. The primary advocate of fracking is the oil industry, which contends that fracked oil and gas is needed to fuel our nation's energy needs, though these are fossil fuels that also add to the greenhouse gas emission problems contributing to global climate change. According to the Backbone Campaign, just last year, big oil lobbying group Western States Petroleum Association spent more than any other group, nearly $8.9 million, to lobby the California state government to grease the wheels for future drilling projects. The Backbone Campaign concludes that it will take a major national movement to fight back against big oil's unlimited resources, and it hopes the climate march in California will be a first step leading to a fracking ban in our state. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Nearly 80 riders on horseback hit the trail Saturday in Ramona to help pay the medical bills for Lynn Fuller, a Poway resident who suffered burns over more than 75% of her body. Fuller's boyfriend, Vidal Webb, set fire to her while she was sleeping, and he also burned her home. He was arrested and later committed suicide in the county jail. Fuller has no health insurance. She has undergone skin graft surgeries and remains in a medically induced coma at UCSD Medical Center, but her condition is improving and she is expected to survive. Her sister and niece, who lived with her, also lost their home, and some funds are also intended to help the family afford another place to live. Kristen Hanley worked with Fuller, an assistant to an equine veterinarian. She says, "I couldn't even fathom who could have done something to one of the nicest, warmest, friendliest, most positive, sweetest people that I have ever known," she told Fox News. So the equestrian community pulled together to help at Saturday's ride, which also included a silent auction. A donation page to help with Fuller's medical bills has been set up at Give Forward. The goal is to raise $500,000. So far, 13% of that goal, or over $64,000, has been raised, including $9,000 from Saturday's trail ride in Ramona, which was organized by Tiffany Neal, another friend of Fuller's. You can also find a link to that donation page at eastcountymagazine.org in our People Power section. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is a wildfire news update.
Last week, controlled burns in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park sent smoke billowing up, visible across much of East County. Now the Cleveland National Forest is slated to conduct prescribed burning from February through June, though exact dates depend upon weather and fuel conditions. The Descanso Ranger District is treating some 500 to 700 acres near the communities of Mount Laguna, Alpine, and Pine Valley. The Alpine prescribed burn area is located southeast of Alpine near Carve Acre. The Corte Madera prescribed burn is located south of Pine Valley. Both of these burns include chaparral slated to be burned. The prescribed burn on Mount Laguna will be conducted along the old wooded hill road north of Sunrise Highway and west of the town of Mount Laguna. For more information on these burns, you can contact Descanso Battalion Chief Rick Marinelli at 619-445-6235. Planting of native trees is also set to begin on Middle Peak in Rancho Cuyamaca State Park during the next few weeks. Kerry Hunsinger from the State Park Service told East County Magazine. He notes that the cedar fire burned so hot it destroyed the seeds of native plants. The stated reason for the burns is to reduce fuel load and thus lower the risk of catastrophic wildfires such as the 2003 Cedar Fire and the 2007 firestorms that devastated our region. However, the burning has drawn criticism from at least one environmental group. Richard Halsey at the California Chaparral Institute has published an article which contends that some burns in the state park are removing chaparral, such as the 2,500 acres of wild lilac that provides habitat for wildlife. State parks have filed for an exemption from environmental review. Halsey says that millions in dollars in grants from corporations are funding the clear-cut burning and tree planting project for carbon sequestration, or planting trees to remove carbon from the atmosphere, but ironically the grinding and burning of the recovering chaparral and the trees killed in the fire will release a significant amount of carbon, the environmentalist concludes. This has been Leon Thompson on East County Magazine.
The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, is reporting approximately 200 close calls in the past year between aircraft and drones. That includes two cases of drones flying too close to airport runways in San Diego County, one in East County near Gillespie Field in El Cajon, and a second in Carlsbad. Now, one San Diego drone maker and seller has devised technology to help solve that problem, 10 News reports. Easy Drone has devised software called geofencing technology. Using GPS, it maps a circle around airports and will disable drones that cross the line to prevent them from endangering planes. The FAA is issuing warnings to offenders while it finalizes new rules that should be in place by year's end. U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer has called on the FAA to crack down on drones after two near misses at Kennedy International Airport in New York and another New York airport where a flight carrying President Barack Obama had recently landed. Senator Schumer called the near misses scary and likened the situation to the Wild West, adding, "It must stop." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
This is a public service announcement from the City of El Cajon. The City of El Cajon Teen Coalition is seeking nominations for its Youth of the Year Award, recognizing those teens who show leadership abilities serving their community in El Cajon. Final selections will be based on dedication, commitment beyond what may be required by school, and demonstrated impact on those served. If you know a youth who has gone the extra mile to improve the quality of life in our community, you are invited to send in a nomination. To qualify for the reward, the nominee must be a resident living in the City of El Cajon and enrolled in grades 6 through 12. Honors will be awarded for services that occurred in 2014. The nominees cannot be current members of the Teen Coalition. Nominations must be returned to the El Cajon Recreation Department by March 6th. Two middle school and two high school students will be chosen for the Youth of the Year Awards, which will be presented at an El Cajon City Council meeting in April. A perpetual plaque will also be displayed in the lobby at City Hall. For more information, call the City's Recreation Department at 619-441-1754.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Susan Brinkman, who is the director and the founder of the Center for Electrosmog Prevention in La Mesa. Susan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now, Susan has spent the last several years battling on behalf of consumers to have the right to opt out from having smart meters installed in their homes or businesses, as well as in an ideal world, you would like to be able to see entire cities, counties, apartment buildings be able to opt out as well, if not banning them completely. In December, a key ruling was made on this by the Public Utilities Commission, and I understand that the proposal was pushed through by none other than Chairman Michael Peavy in what some might view as his parting gift to utilities just before he resigned amid a corruption investigation into his actions on behalf of PG&E, his former employer, to help sort of cover up their liability, reduce their liability for the San Bruno pipeline explosion, or so it seemed in a string of emails exposed between him, his staff, and the PG&E executives. What were the problems, in your view, with the decision that Michael Peavy pushed through in his final hours?
Well, phase two of the opt-out proceeding did not take into consideration health and safety problems with smart meters. And that proceeding, we were specifically told that we could not consider health and safety, that it was beyond the scope of the proceeding. And we were arguing, and there were a number of groups that were participating in it. We were all arguing that people are getting sick from smart meters. That's why they want to opt out. And we were supposed to be discussing whether the Americans with Disabilities Act would preclude having to pay to opt out, because to get a smart meter off your house, you have to pay if you are a regular income person, not low-income person, you would pay $75 to join the program and $10 a month for the meter reader. And people were saying that that was unfair to pay that, not to be irradiated. Right. So we were supposed to examine that during that proceeding. But instead, after we had all submitted our briefs, our legal briefs, and showing that doctor organizations say that they're dangerous and showing that people with many medical conditions, normal medical conditions, shouldn't be exposed to this type of radiation, they refused to consider or discuss those briefs, and they refused to cover whether entire communities should be able to opt out, whether it's condo complexes or apartment buildings or entire, as Miriam said, counties, cities or towns who want to opt out because they're concerned. There's 57 of those in California, including 12 counties, that don't want smart meters within their boundaries because they know that they are dangerous because they've looked into it. So Michael Peavy didn't care at all about the health and safety of Californians, as he did not appear to care with regards to the San Bruno explosion and the gas pipeline leaks
which
that were allowed,
killed
8 people, injured 63, blew up 35 houses, and so on.
Susan, how many people statewide have filed complaints with the PUC claiming that they believe they have some sort of health problems related to their smart meters?
Many tens of thousands.
Many tens of thousands.
Yes.
That's awfully high number.
About 2.5 years ago, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of, I believe it was around 20,000 then.
Tell us about your own experience. What made you believe that smart meters posed a health problem?
I had 2 smart meters on my property. I didn't realize that I had 2 at first, but I had one on the other side of my headboard, and it was right where my pillow was, right on the other side of the wall. I didn't realize that it was emitting pulsed radiation. I started within a week or so to get symptoms that were odd, but I didn't associate it with the smart meter because I had never heard anything about that.
And what were those symptoms?
I was the thing that I remember the most is that I was sleeping 1 hour a night, many nights. And my husband also was waking up, and like we're laying there in bed like wide-eyed, and we're thinking, this is really weird. Like, you know, yeah, we just went to bed an hour ago. We wake up, can't get back to sleep at all. And it was just very odd. And then over a period of 6 months, I kept getting increasing symptoms, ringing ears, ear pain, dizziness, tingling of the scalp, headaches, nausea.
And these are symptoms.
Just weird stuff that I had not had before.
These are common complaints of people who've been exposed. And I will say, for the record, that I had a smart meter removed after a great battle with SDG&E from my own home. And I had a very similar experience, Susan. It was put on the other side of my bedroom wall, and immediately, within days, I started having a ringing in the ear and headaches, ear pain, ear pressure. It just wouldn't go away, you know. And whenever I would travel, though, if I was gone for a week or more, which I was 3 times during that next year, it would go away. And the first night back home, it would recur. So I finally eventually won the battle and got the smart meter removed, paying for it. And the problem went away, although I've been left with the sensitivity in that ear where it'll feel okay, but anytime I get sick, I now have what they call ear canal dysfunction that I never had before that. So I do share your concern about this, as apparently do many other people. Now, your doctor actually concurred with you on this. What did your doctor have to say?
Well, I had actually not figured out it was the smart meter, and I was getting sick from sick after 6 months from using my cell phone, which I use on speakerphone, by the way, all the time, but I still couldn't use it. I'd get nauseous and headache and dizzy, and then I couldn't use my computer suddenly. And I had Wi-Fi in my house, and I called an environmental doctor I knew, because I figured it had to be something environmental that the two things had in common. It had something to do possibly with radiation. And so years ago, I had gone to this doctor for a mold exposure. And so he asked me right off, do you have a smart meter on your house? And so I said, yes, but I really didn't understand the association. I said, but, you know, I don't want to talk about that. Like, I want to talk about my cell phone and the computer, and what does that have to do with how I'm feeling? Like, just fix it, because I need to be able to use these things. And so he explained to me that one right after another, the people who had who are his patients had been coming in with these reports of being ill from smart meters. And he is somewhat of an expert also on wireless and health, and he is what you call electrosensitive himself. He's sensitive to this type of radiation, which is actually what I am now. That was the biggest thing that happened to me from the smart meters, which I didn't mention. Now I'm electrosensitive, so now I cannot be in the presence of Wi-Fi. I cannot be in the strong Wi-Fi. Cannot be around people using cell phones.
Well, that must be terribly difficult in today's
very,
society.
It's very difficult everywhere. Because they're installing Wi-Fi everywhere, not knowing it's dangerous, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just Russian roulette to go out in public. So,
now,
anyway.
The utilities are not here today, so I suppose, in all fairness, we should explain a little bit about what a smart meter is and why utilities want these. They certainly say that it allows them to more accurately measure the electrical usage at a home and during peak hours and so forth.
But actually,
and cut their labor costs because they don't have to have meter readers.
Actually, they are known to overbill using the smart meters, so I would not agree that smart meters. I've learned a lot about smart meters in the past 4 years. There's overbilling. They malfunction in high temperatures and overbill you. They also can malfunction if you are near a cell tower, and the cell tower, somehow the frequencies can impact the smart meter.
Interesting.
That's what I understand, and what someone up in Canada did a study on that and discovered. And so sometimes it's like triple, you know, or quadruple your bill. So,
interesting.
But the reason that they want these is because something called the smart grid, which is a wireless electric grid with at least wireless components in it, that is replacing the old-style electric grid. And the smart meters are supposed to transmit wirelessly your usage to the electric company and gas company by, cheaper. They don't have to use meter readers. And they can also control your appliances. And, you know, that sounds really weird. Like, people are probably thinking, I don't believe that. But the appliances are actually built to communicate. The newer appliances, especially GE appliances, are built to communicate with the smart meters.
True.
So that they can actually, like, instead of having a brownout, they could control and turn down your appliances, like shut off your washing machine.
Oh, great.
Or if they're not having enough electricity because of whatever, maybe it's very high temperatures and everyone's running their air conditioners, they can turn down, you know, people's usage, so dial it down so that they don't have a brownout.
And, fascinating.
Yeah, so it saves them money, and they also want to charge us, which they haven't started yet, for time of day use. And smart meters can do a lot more than just charge us in the old ways. So that, like people in Canada, they've already started using their smart meters this way. So it's more expensive during the day to use the electricity as opposed to in the middle of the night.
Now, the concerns you've raised, especially the health concerns, have gotten the attention of not the Public Utilities Commission, apparently, but many elected officials around the state. Tell us how many counties and cities, actual jurisdictions, have told the PUC that they actually want the right to opt out and not have any smart meters in their jurisdictions.
57 of them, and 12 of those are counties.
12 counties and 57 jurisdictions.
Like San Francisco County and Ventura County, and, you know, big, large counties. Most of them in Northern California. Southern California has not had the news media cover this the way they've covered it in Northern California.
Interesting.
And so people are pretty much laid back about it. They're unaware. And there seems to be, I would say, less concern with health and safety on the part of the city councils and the county board of supervisors. I certainly have experienced that with the city of La Mesa and the county board of supervisors in San Diego County. Less of a concern, you know, no concern whatsoever about the smart meters. They don't want to hear it, and they don't want to talk about it. And they seem to be kind of colluding, or I wonder, are they getting campaign funds from SDG&E? I just wonder, why are they so eager? Why are they ignoring people who are bringing forward something that is truly legitimate about smart meters. Are they getting campaign funds from SDG&E? I've wondered that. You know, I'd love to see an audit on that.
Yeah, well, certainly SDG&E does give out quite a bit of money, and its parent organization anyway, SEMPRA, to many elected officials around the region. Now, what happened when people who were concerned about smart meters, people allied with your organization's point of view, attempted to or did testify before the Public Utilities Commission? What kind of reaction did they get?
Well, thousands and thousands of people have gone to the Public Utility Commission meetings in San Francisco, where they're generally held. Once in a while, they'll hold them in Los Angeles, and we'll have these little satellite ones that occurred a couple of years ago. There was one in San Clemente. But generally speaking, the people are, you know, they're coming forward saying, I'm sick from smart meters. This is what's doing to me. I'm living in my car. I can't live in my house. I'm, you know, I lost my job. My children are sick. You know, my whole family's sick. I need help. Sometimes they are screamed at. Sometimes they are laughed at, ridiculed.
Is that by Michael Peavy?
By Michael Peavy and other people on the commission.
We've certainly seen Peavy in action on another issue.
Yes, that calls, not just him. It's, you know, others, too.
I'm sorry. Well, it calls to mind the San Onofre hearing, where we had Mike Aguirre, the former San Diego City Attorney, calling out Peavy about his overly cozy ties to another utility, that was Southern California Edison, and trying to kind of grill him on his relation with that while he was making his decisions on San Onofre. And Peavy got so peeved that he screamed in this public hearing at Aguirre and told him to shut up, you know.
And he's done that to the people with the smart meter complaints. He's screamed shut up at them, and we've got this on tape. I've got it on our website.
Unbelievably disrespectful. And, you know, and Governor Brown, instead of firing this guy, is continuing to stand by him even now with state and federal investigations underway. So, Susan, what message would you have for those investigators?
Well, Mr. Peavy has been forced to resign.
Yes.
So as of December 31st, and replaced by yet another utility person, Michael Picker.
Well, actually, Michael Picker most recently was working in the governor's office, actually, in his renewable energy division.
But he came from Sacramento's SMUD utility, the board of SMUD.
So that's
his utility background. So he ran a municipal utility.
Yeah, so who knows? He does say there's going to be reforms and there's going to be more transparency. He has taken some steps, but it remains to be seen whether these are going to be real, meaningful reforms or whether it's going to be back to business as usual. Now, another problem you've pointed out is this revolving door of staff between the utilities and the PUC. Give us a couple of examples.
I have to point out Michael Picker as an example. You've got Michael Peavy being the former CEO of Southern California Edison, and the person who was in his position, I believe his name was Bryson, Mr. Bryson, who was the president of the commission. They switched when Michael Peavy went to become the president of the commission 12 years ago. Mr. Bryson went to become the CEO of Southern California Edison.
Now, there was a woman that was forced to resign amid all kinds of allegations recently.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Carol Brown, who was the top staff person for the chief of staff for Michael Peavy, was found to be improperly helping cover up some of the San Bruno fallout after the San Bruno neighborhood blew up.
Yeah, and where is she
now?
She
was sympathizing with and trying to help PG&E to kind of slip some of this under the rug. And so she was she lost her position, but they made her an administrative law judge, an ALJ.
With the PUC.
With the PUC, so that now she will be one of these judges who will make decisions about health and safety.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. I saw this in action, this kind of thing, at a PUC hearing here involving wildfire survivors, you know, who were suing SDG&E, and they put an administrative law judge in charge of this who used to be an attorney for SDG&E. Unbelievable that this someone, you know, with such a cozy tie to the company being sued, being investigated, would be put in charge of the investigation into that company.
Yeah, this is totally loaded with conflicts of interest. This is business as usual at the CPUC. This is how they conduct their business 24/7, and for decades they've done this.
So you've said you believe there were conflicts of interest at play in the smart meter hearings as well, and that you believe that the federal and state investigators should be looking into that too.
Definitely, because they refused to investigate health and safety. They refused to even have anyone speak about it in the course of the proceedings. They will not take it into any kind of consideration. You know, the
people, and yet part of the PUC mission is supposed to be to protect the public health and safety and to regulate the utilities.
And they're breaking state law when they do that. There's state laws that say that they must consider safety, and their own policy, which they redid this past August, and you know, in the wake of San Bruno's explosion, you know, 5 years later, whatever it's been, they said that every proceeding would definitely include health and safety. And so right after that, I had our attorney file a motion to include health and safety in the smart meter opt-out phase two proceeding, which they had stalled about a year and a half before that. And there was no answer to that motion. And they continued even right through to the end. But Michael Peavy's decision was that they were not including health and safety. So it really doesn't matter what they say.
Yeah. So a couple
it's what they do that matters.
A couple of final questions for you. With the opt-out, could you explain to listeners what their rights are right now if you have a smart meter and don't want it, or if you've had one removed and you're paying that fee right now?
Yes. Well, if you have a smart meter, and by the way, a lot of people don't know if they have one, you can take a look at it, but I wouldn't go too close to it, because the closer you are, the stronger the radiation is. But if it looks digital, if it doesn't have the little dials on your electric meter, that's where your electric box is, your electric panel, then if it has a digital face on it, like a digital clock, then that is a smart meter. And I can just tell you that everybody, virtually everybody in our county has them.
Yeah, they pretty well replaced them all.
So if you live in this county, you've got one. So then, unless you opted out. So if you don't want one, what you can do is you can call SDG&E, and the number for that, I happen to have it here, is 1-877-357-8525, and tell them you want to opt out from the smart meters. You will have a gas and electric smart meter on your home, usually, but they will tell you then that it will cost you money. So if you are on the CARE program, the low-income program, it will cost you $10 to start up the program and $5 a month for a meter reader. If you are not on the CARE program and you're not low-income, it will cost you $75 to start on the program and $10 a month for the meter reader.
Now, if you have one and you've been paying this $10 a month or $5 a month, depending on your income, there is a cap on that, I understand. There's a period at which that ends and you can stop paying that money. What is that cap?
Yes. Well, the few bones that we were thrown with the PV decision, which was voted by the commission on December 19th, says that after 3 years of paying, so you need to know when you started paying for that opt-out, if you have an opt-out, or if you start opting out now, after 3 years, you no longer have to pay SDG&E extra. It will be spread amongst their other costs.
Okay, there you go. So and if you're paying $10 a
socialized.
Month, $360 later, you can finally stop paying that fee.
Right. 360, okay. And then plus the 75 initial one. But I also want to say that they're now reading the meters every other month, according to that, to save money. That was one of our suggestions, to save money, read the meters less. So they're estimating them every other month, and then in between, they're reading the meters so that they don't have to send someone out every single month. So people should, who are opting out, expect that meter reader to come, because this is really important for people who have dogs and the meter in their backyard or something. That some of them are having to stay home to have the meter reader come because they're refusing to allow customers to read their own meters like they used to in the past.
Yeah, complaints. They won't tell them the time they come. So it's really
they're playing
crazy.
Games. One person who's my veterinarian has to stay home, or her husband has to stay home and lose a day of work waiting for the meter reader to come, and then they play games. They come, you know,
And yet they never require that.
Within a 3-day period. They say, oh, we don't have to come that day. We could come anytime within a 3-day period.
And they never did this. We should note, the utilities were not doing this to dog owners before smart meters came along.
They were letting them fill out something and put it on their front door with the, you know, filling out what the meter looked like and marking on it, you know, what the usage was. And then they would do a true up every now and then and come and check it when they could catch them home.
One more thing. When we were talking about the health impacts, we discussed a lot of these sort of annoying and debilitating kind of problems that you had with the headaches and sleeplessness and ear pain. Mm-hmm. But there are some more severe things that long-term exposure to the smart meters, or to pulsed radiation, rather, from a variety of sources, has been linked to.
Yes.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about some of the medical evidence and anecdotal evidence on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's tens of thousands of studies on radio frequency radiation, peer-reviewed studies that have passed muster and been published that associate RF radiation with what the World Health Organization says is potential development of cancer, but which the scientists who did the study say is definite development of cancer. They feel it's carcinogenic. It can also cause seizures. It can also cause heart problems, arrhythmias.
Yeah, I might mention my husband developed an arrhythmia within a couple of weeks of having the smart meter put on our house that had to be surgically corrected.
And it can cause memory loss. They're really worried about older people developing, you know, dementia.
Interesting.
Because they're exposed to this type of radiation.
And it's the same kind of pulsed radiation that we see in cell phones, especially the early cell phones that had the higher dosages of it. You had some interesting stories about that.
I would say that the smart meters emit pulsed radiation, which appears to be unlike our other devices. The other devices may emit some degree of pulsed radiation. I'm not really an expert on the other devices, but I will say that there's a continuous wave radiation that might come from cell towers or many of our other types of devices that is different than pulsed radiation. Pulsed radiation is more bioactive. That means it affects our cells more, and in the studies, it's more damaging to biological beings. That means people, animals, insects, any living creature is more impacted in a health-wise than from pulsed radiation.
If people want to get more information about smart meters and the Center for Electrosmog Prevention, Susan, where can they go?
They can go to our website is electrosmogprevention.org. That's all one word, electrosmogprevention.org. And we have some drop-down menus. If you go to public health alerts on the top left, you'll drop down to where you see smart meters. It also offers information about electrosmog pollution that's emitted by other types of devices like Wi-Fi and things like that. But the smart meters actually are the things that people are complaining about right away. Like it doesn't seems like people are getting sicker from smart meters than any of these other things. Now, I would like to just read a list of the things that people have reported. Headaches, ringing ears, dizziness, breathing problems, insomnia, nausea, cognitive problems. That includes learning problems. If you have a child with ADHD or learning disabilities, the scientists are saying, or even autism, the scientists are saying that this type of radiation could contribute to that or worsen it. Memory loss, muscle spasms, heart problems, and seizures. Those are just that's a short list.
Yeah.
There's a much longer list, but I didn't bring it.
Yeah, very, very troubling. You would think that a public utilities commission charged with protecting the public safety would want to look at the health impacts of this. And, you know, maybe they find that not every one of those symptoms can be documented with, you know, double-blind, peer-reviewed studies, but maybe they can be, maybe some of them can be, maybe all of them can be. We just don't know, because California's Public Utilities Commission seems to be operating in the interests of the utilities and not the consumers. What can consumers do, Susan, if they're concerned about this? What steps can they take in terms of activism?
The first thing I would recommend is that people opt out from smart meter, if they can, they opt out. And the second thing is file a complaint with the CPUC. Contact your elected representatives at the local and county level and state level and let them know how you feel about smart meters. That's what these people did up in Northern California. That's why so much action was taken.
Yeah, the entire county, San Francisco, you know, wants to opt out.
Yeah, go to meetings that are held, public meetings at your town and at the county level, and advocate for them to investigate and take a position on smart meters, you know, locally. And, you know, tell everybody you know about this so okay. that we can get something done about it, because this is happening not just in California. It's all over the United States and in many of the developed nations, or most of the developed nations, because foolishly they're switching over the electric grid to the smart grid. And, you know, it's impacting people everywhere. And the studies, by the way, we don't have studies specifically on smart meters. What we have is studies on this exact type of radiation and this type of pulsed radiation. There's tens of thousands of studies on RF radiation, and particularly in the microwave range, and it's been known to be a hazard for 50 years.
Okay. Put in perspective for us, Susan, do we have any kind of data to explain how the risk of a smart meter might compare to the risk of, say, a cell phone, which we know has been linked to glioma, a type of brain cancer that's much more common in cell phone users?
One radiation expert has said that smart meters provide the radiation exposure equivalent to 160 cell phones.
160 cell phones. What about somebody who lives in an apartment complex where there are entire walls of smart meters? It's not just one, but you might be exposed to a dozen of them.
That exposure is exponentially more. I do want to say that that was also supposed to, the banks of meters were supposed to have been covered in this smart meter opt-out proceeding phase two, that they delayed and then suddenly ended without any further discussion. So we never got to discuss the dangers of these banks of meters.
So if you're an apartment dweller, does that mean that you have no option to avoid a smart meter other than moving?
That's correct. And then the next person moving in will be exposed.
Wow.
And the even opting out, what good does it do you to opt out if you've got 5 or 100 or 200 of these meters at close proximity? Some people have them on the wall of their home. And what good does it do you if just one of those is missing?
Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking with Susan Brinkman, who is the director and founder of the Center for Electrosmog Prevention in La Mesa. We've been talking about the potential dangers associated with smart meters. Susan, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thanks so much for having me.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.